Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's topic is sled training, and I'm trying to think how to word this. I was trying to say something really nice and I blanked on the word. So, well, Nate Questel is here.
Again.
Yeah, there's a wonderful introduction. But welcome back.
Thank you, Rob. I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming back despite that horrible welcome. Yes.
It's how I know that I'm at the gym.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, you're among friends.
Kind of warm reception.
Yeah, you don't need to have anything.
That's right.
So, yes. But, so we're going to talk about sled training. And so, did you have anything you wanted to kind of start with?
Well, like I said, I've really started using it quite a bit more, and the thing we were just talking about prior to is just the safety of it, and I think a lot of people look at it and are maybe intimidated just because they're like, and to me, I think it's something that should be implemented early on in most people's training, just to be able to get them to understand what it is to push, be able to be under a little bit more weight, but you, like we just said, you don't have that eccentric phase of it, like a squat where, you know, you can lose it and
form. Not a heavy stretching, like heavy stretching of the muscle under a weight load.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, you've talked about it in past as far as like muscle cardio and stuff,
yes.
and just how to kind of implement that into any kind of program, not mm-hmm. just somebody who's looking for fat loss or power or cardio or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can kind of use it throughout, and it's just a good tool that we use.
And one thing I think, like, I want to kind of get into right now is it's one of the best things you can use when you have an injury or coming back from an injury and stuff like
right.
that. So can you tell them a little bit about some of the injuries you've had?
And, oh yeah, that's okay.
yeah.
2 hours later. I mean, I was a college football player, and everything that kind of came along with that, had 3 knee surgeries, a complete reconstruction of my left knee, both shoulders separated at ACA and SC joints multiple times, ruptured disc L4, L5, and had surgery along with that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of aches and pains. And,
yes.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
No.
But what I wanted to get across was that I think some hesitations towards sled work is either the person doesn't know what to do with it.
Right.
Or when somebody's coming back from an injury, they think they have to squat, bench, and deadlift because that's the things they always used to do, and you don't. Like, starting with the sled is an amazing place to start because you can do it when you have injuries,
right.
you know, current or past, and it's, like, a great way to train lower body, upper body, core, like, stabilization, bracing. Like, you can pretty much address everything with a sled using, like, the right straps and attachments and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What comes to my mind every time I'm pushing that sled, whether it's the Prowler or the sore neck sled,
the flat sled,
Is the scene in Conan when he's pushing the wheel.
Of course,
everybody loves that movie.
yeah.
But when you watch him transform, and all he's doing is pushing that damn wheel around and around and around,
yes.
and that's where I'm going, is yes. I'm going to be Conan.
There you go, yeah. And that's like one of the most famous gyms in the world is Westside Barbell, and they use sleds all the time for everything, always.
Yeah.
You know, and they're, like, they focus on strength, so they're some of the strongest human beings on the planet, but they're also some of the most injured, too. So, like, they'll have somebody completely, like, you know, blow out their back. Or, like, Louis Simmons himself has broke his back, like, 3 or 4 times.
Right.
And, like, they'll still use that sled to come back even stronger than before.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, I think that's one of the great things with it. So, what are some things you use a sled for? So, if somebody's like, okay, I know what a sled is, but other than me just running around with it as cardio, what else is there to do with it?
Yeah. And I was thinking about this, too. Like, for strength-wise, I mean, I've definitely used that when – because if my lower back is feeling a little from past injuries or I just feel tweaked, I can still get an amazing quad workout pushing that sled. And,
oh, yeah.
And I think of James Harrison, who played linebacker for the Steelers, which I think he had like 1,400 pounds on that thing, and he pushed it like
two. Yeah, he was freaking major.
And again, but I watched that video, and I'm like, is that really doing anything? Because, you know, anyway, nothing against James Harrison, because God knows that man's a beast. But anyway, that's the one thing that I've used it for initially was just for strength. It was because I knew I needed to get that deep kind of push, like from a squatted position.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it makes you brace your core like you're in a squat.
Oh, absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
You can't, and I mean, flat back, you know, I preach that to my kids, you know, tight stomach, flat back. And that's
mm-hmm.
when you're down into that position, your hands are up. It's very similar to a squat to me, again, without the loading phase of it. So you're not getting that stretch of the hands. Loading,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, like so when your hands are on like the handles, whether they're the horizontal or vertical handles,
right.
You have to brace in your shoulders. You have to have your upper back in proper position, your lower back in proper position.
So
it's just like bracing for a squat. So somebody might say, okay, sled pushes are really good for my legs. But it's not only the legs. Mm-hmm. Like, there's everything. It's a full body movement when you do heavy enough. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I watching some other people, I've watched some of the other trainers use the sled in the gym here. And the thing that I like seeing people give the proper cues and corrections, because it's very easy to want to get duck footed on that when it gets heavy.
That's true.
And the reality of it is you want your foot to be flat, just as in a running, toes always in connection with the floor. I mean, because Achilles tendon, calf, everything is so active in that push like that, if it's done correctly. And again, I think it's easy to stay in that correct movement as long as somebody just cueing you to do that.
Yeah, and then it becomes a habit, habitual, and you don't think of it. Because a lot of people, like, if they do go duck foot, it's because they have no glutes, they have weak hips.
Yep.
You know, so if you get them, so they're naturally going to do that without cueing.
Right.
Their body's going to find the strongest position, which for them would be a really crappy one.
Yeah.
So we want them to build up these weaknesses. So cueing them in the right positions, getting the repetitions down to where they can do it on their own is definitely important. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of benefits to a sled, but then there are ways where people just waste time on a sled.
Yeah. We're concentrating on lower body, but like I did, and this is kind of a free form. We don't really have an outline of how we're going on this.
Yeah, we're swinging this, by the way.
The other day, I did it for somewhat of a muscle cardio workout, and what I did is I tied the bow rope to the flat sled.
Nice. Yeah.
And I hand over hand drug it to myself, and then I would run back with the rope and drag it the full length again, and then I would turn around and pull the sled all the way back to its beginning position. And so it was, and I don't know what the bow rope length is, 30, 40 feet? That was a back, and I mean, I could change it from truly being almost like a more of a concentrated bicep pull and a little bit of back to really rotating my core and pulling, you know, as kind of a rotational exercise.
Yeah, you can lock your torso in place or you can rotate your torso.
Exactly.
And you can even be in an uprighted position versus a bent over position.
Exactly. So, I mean, that was another thing. And I'd never done that with it. Most of the time it had always been just pushing it or pulling it, not actually using it for another, you know, it's kind of a different implement. But, I mean, still very effective.
Yeah, and I've put on, I remember I was watching, this is probably 10-15 years ago, I was watching, there was a bodybuilder who was talking about the benefit of concentric motions to aid in healing between workouts. And so he didn't want eccentrics, which caused more muscle damage.
Sure, right.
He wanted concentric, but enough to, it wasn't a ton of weight, it was just something that he would flex your muscles against, and it would push and pull some fluid in and out of it. So he was doing, there's different names for types of straps and attachments, but he basically had a long attachment to it, and he would kind of face towards the sled, walking backwards, doing bicep curls. And it was light enough that he could just curl, step back three or four steps, curl, step back, curl. And then he faced, turned around, faced towards it, but going backwards, doing bent over tricep kickbacks.
Oh, wow.
You can also do, he went doing reverse flies. So you face towards it and do a reverse fly. You can face away from it and do a chest fly. So I've also done like crucifix drags.
That's
where I'll have it where like I'm facing away from the sled, my arms are extended to the side, like almost like the start of a chest fly, but you just walk like that.
Oh Lord!
And it really pulls and tugs on the front side of like your pulls across your chest, your front delts, your biceps.
Yeah.
So you can do it. Like if you did it heavy, it would be questionable in terms of health. But the idea of it is it's under a bracing weight that you can manage. But what I liked about it was it created a feeling of like a stretch for your chest.
Right.
So afterwards your chest was pumped up, but it felt opened up.
Sure.
So you got rid of like a hunched back kind of feel from like a tight chest day.
Yeah.
So it's a way to where, say I was training and I want to get like some strength stuff in, I want to get some muscle building, but I also want to do some cardio. So you could do a bench day where, you know, you do some type of warm up, like chest flies or cable crossovers, dumbbell flies, warm up your chest, do a heavy barbell movement or dumbbell movements, do your bodybuilder accessories, and then you can go out and do a crucifix drag, and that'll open up your chest before you leave. So therefore, somebody could actually have a bodybuilder, strength athlete, and general conditioning all in one workout.
Right.
Yeah. And you can do that in well under an hour. You can do that in 40, 45 minutes.
Gee, man, Chris,
yeah. That's something, like I like using it for that. So that's So typically how I use a sled, like in my own training, would be weighted conditioning.
Right.
So where I don't want to do it super light and do it for an hour, so I'm not going to do that. And I tend not to like, I'll challenge myself every now and then with a consistent drag.
Mm-hmm.
Where like behind our gym, like the whole way down the parking lot,
yeah.
I don't even really know. It's probably a football field, really.
Oh, at least.
Yeah. So like I'll sometimes do where I drag the sled out to there, which is already a workout. And then I'll drag the sled. Like, I've done it with neck harness before.
I've seen the video.
Yeah, so that's a little weird. but yes, I wanted to do, I was trying to improve upper back strength for a deadlift.
Right.
So I would drag a sled forward with a neck harness for the length of a football field, and then turn around and drag it backwards with a neck harness for the length of a football field.
Right.
And that was something where it was like a continuous effort.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've also done short interval bursts, you know, yeah. like we do like, you know, 10-second sprint, stand still for 10 seconds, 10-second yeah. sprint, stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, the smaller flat sled, and I talked to Jonathan about this one day, another trainer here, is I just had one plate on it because it's definitely lighter than yeah. the Sorenex sled. But hooked up the chest harness and just walked the parking lot
yeah.
for 15 minutes, yeah. just pulling that. And, you know, the first round, I think I actually talked to you about this one time. The first round, I was like, man, maybe I should put some more weight on.
Yeah.
After about the third lap, I think I made 7 or 8 laps is what I ended up
okay,
making.
That's pretty good.
But,
yeah.
Oh, it was, yeah. yeah, by the end, I was just like, Lord, I'm so glad I didn't put any more weight on this thing. And yeah. again, it wasn't ever like, you know, a heavy squat, but it's just like every time you take a step, it's your body's mm-hmm. having to, you know, and again, cardio-wise, I mean, I was gassed by
yeah.
the end of
yeah,
the,
your heart rate's yeah. up the entire time.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then we have, like, big, heavy anchor chains, like big, like, 200, 300-pound anchor chains, and we'll drag those sometimes, like, as a sled.
Mm-hmm.
And I like doing that for females because if you get them light enough to where they can do a long stride with a heel strike,
mm-hmm.
to where you know that the initial start of the next step is a hamstring and glute drive.
Yep.
Then you can do them basically for 5 minutes, and they basically just got like a bajillion glute flexes
yeah.
against some weight. So you can get a really big glute pump by making it actually like a medium weight, where again, we can take a long stride, do a heel strike.
Right.
Versus like a toe drive the
yeah.
whole time.
I don't think so, I've yeah. either heard either a video of yours or you were training your mom in here. No, it wasn't. I'm trying to think who it was you were training, but it may have been Lauren back in the day.
Okay.
But that was that heel strike. And I actually was working sleds that day, and
yeah.
I hadn't been paying attention to that. And as soon as I did, it was just like, holy crap.
Yeah, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, you just, I mean, it's so intention-wise that to pull your body over that heel, I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's all hamstring and glute. And it just getting
yeah.
that hip tight through there, I mean.
Yeah, and that's what I think is cool about a sled, like, is there's pros and cons sometimes. Like, as somebody who's been doing health and fitness for, you know, 10-plus years, we usually love when something has a million purposes.
Right.
And then when you're brand new to it, that's way overwhelming.
Right.
People like, just tell me one thing I can do and let me get good at that. But that's what's cool about a sled is it can be as simple as, you know, push it or put a belt around your waist and drag it.
Mm-hmm.
It can be that simple. Or you can, you know, push my toes, I can push my heels, I can push forward or backward. That makes a difference as well, whether you're working quads or hamstrings or calves. You can push from a low handle, a high handle. There's differences between horizontal versus vertical handles.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff. And like we said, upper body, you can row a sled.
Yeah.
You know, you can like push a sled, you can do everything with
yeah,
it. So
that's
awesome about it.
My kids, I have a home gym, and I've built a sled, and it's, I'll have to send
cool.
Rob a picture because it's
yeah, please do.
2x4s. Screwed together. The runners on it are 5x4 decking boards, and then I took cutting boards, the UMHW,
the
hybrid
plastic, yeah.
plastic. Put 2 pads on either side of it, and then
well
it's got.
Done.
Anyway, it's amazing. But anyway, watching them push that,
mm-hmm.
it's really. Both of them wrestle, and it just helping them initiate like. A shot or anything like that. It's helped with their hip explosion.
Yeah.
But you were talking about rowing a sled. And that's one thing I've worked with them is I've got, it's one of the Spudnik big straps with handles in it.
Yeah.
And they'll go back until, you know, the strap is tight. And then they violently throw their hips and pull back the
mm-hmm.
strap at the same time. So it's kind of a hip thrust and lat pull at the same time, and they'll pull at the length of it.
Yeah.
And then the next time, it's throwing it away from them. You're using the sled to explosively
mm-hmm.
Push it away from them, and then they regather and then throw again. And
yeah.
for explosion in an athlete,
it's amazing.
It is an amazing thing, and it's very controlled. Like I said, it's not like you're having to hold on to something, or you know, you're worried about dropping something. The sled is only going to go if you push it or pull it.
So, yeah, it's already on the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're right, like, because those, like if you think of, like, if the listeners think of like a barbell bent over row, where your hips are bracing, your back is flat, and you're pulling in between your shoulder blades, it's similar to that, but violent.
Yeah.
And what it is you have to brace your hips. Like, you have to learn to drive from the hips, not the middle of your ribs.
Right.
Where a lot of young kids bend nowadays. But it gets them learning proper body mechanics for sport.
Yeah.
So it's really awesome for youth because, again, there's no eccentric, like, components. You're not worrying about, like, tearing muscle or anything. You're not putting a weight on their spine, so there's no spinal loading they have to worry about. But it's teaching them proper mechanics and giving them a chance to be explosive and, like, be athletic while being ridiculously safe.
Yeah. Well, that's along that lines. I also have, we call it the micro sled or sprint sled. I mean, it's
okay,
it will hold a 45-pound plate, but it's got a hip belt harness and everything, and they can run on the grass with it. And lower loads on that, that's something that I've done with the Prowler or the flat sled and this sled, is giving, especially somebody for me, and you can relate to this, is multiple hamstring tears.
Yeah,
is
unfortunately.
Trying to sprint, and I know how good sprints are for me, but it's terrible.
So
I mean, I've blown myself apart so many times thinking, one more, and that's the one. But when you put yourself underneath that load, it slows you down enough, and you can probably explain how this works a little bit better, but it makes me, I have better mechanics, and I'm underneath a load as well, and I get just as much out of the sprints, but I'm just not going as fast. So it doesn't have that time where you seem to be overextended on your hamstrings or anything, because your drive is so much shorter, it seems like.
Yeah, you can set it up where you shorten the range of motion appropriately, where it's actually a good thing,
right,
where you shorten the range, and good luck making it this precise, but it could be something where you could short it to 90%.
Right.
To where you avoid that last 10% that typically has like a tear to it. And then also what's nice about weighted sprints like that is you have to create an explosive force through the muscle that would be similar to a typical run. But since the muscle is loaded, that contraction speed is slower.
Mm.
So you have 100% force, but your contraction speed is slower, which makes it less of a likely to tear.
That's great.
So that's one of the main reasons why, like, sprinting against a weight or of a sled, you're going to get a lot less hamstring tears than you would body weight sprinting.
Yeah.
So it's, you get 100% force production, but you don't get the speed of the contraction to cause the problems.
So you alluded to injury earlier, and you can tell Rob's had more than I have, I think, muscular-wise. But
probably muscle-wise, yeah. So you got more joints than I do, yeah.
Yeah. But when do you... You know, you're training people all the time. So when do you decide, okay, hey, this is something where I know I'm going to use the sled as an option?
Yeah, so we'll go through a couple little categories here. So the first kind of most often type of people I'm going to see, or like any general personal trainer will see, is weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's a little out of shape, they want to burn some calories, and they want to get a little bit physical strength. Well, actually, they usually don't even care about physical strength or muscle size, but us as the trainer know it's important to make them strong and build their weak muscles, so that way they're balancing their joints, and they just really want the fat off. So typically what I find is, if the person, a lot of people when they first come, they don't have aerobic conditioning to even push that sled 40 feet three or four times, and they're done.
Right.
So in that case, I usually try to get them their aerobic conditioning up through resistance training, so like leg press. So that's something that I feel is, it has a higher capacity for a weight load on their body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to have a higher capacity for like muscle change and whatnot. So I'll invest into the leg press first. But then say, for example, their strength is gone. So say we have a 30-minute session. We come in, we do a quick warm-up, we do the leg press, we work up to a heavy set, and then we do a second set. Then you can see their form's breaking down. There isn't a possibility for a high-quality third set. But they've only done two sets of legs. That's not good enough for volume. So then you go to the sled.
Mm.
So, and that's where I'll use a sled usually, and I'll either use it non-weighted to get enough volume out of them for lower body, or I'll put weight on as they start to get more fit. So I'll use it as like a finisher for volume on legs. Or if somebody's fit enough, you can use it as a warm-up. So that's actually like most often when I use it now. Like recently I was getting ready for a powerlifting meet. So before I would do my squats or deadlifts, I would just grab the sled, open the double doors, go outside, push and pull it around for 6 or 7 minutes and put it back and I'll be good to go.
Yeah.
Because if you push it and pull it, you're going to hit every single muscle in the lower body. You're going to get core stability. You're going to get the upper back bracing warmed up. So you get such a thorough warm up in just 8 minutes.
Right.
But then you still have your full time and you still have enough energy to go through your big workout.
Right.
Yeah. So I can use it as a warm up for all the joints or use it as volume work for people trying to like lose weight. And bodybuilders, I do believe there's use for it. Like we give you that chest exercise, like chest workout kind of thing where you can use it to kind of like increase blood flow to the area once it's already traumatized.
Yeah.
So once you beat up, so say you did an awesome back workout, you know, you got your warm up in, you did some heavy rows, heavy pull ups and pull downs, and then you can go out in the, you know, go use a sled to do rows. And that's a good finisher for like hitting whatever muscle fibers are left that you didn't get. And you can change your body positioning to get a bunch of different angles.
And you're just getting you can change the concentric. Your hand.
Yeah, you're just getting the concentric. So at that point, you've already had enough eccentric that you don't necessarily want to risk like a muscle damage right. or like tearing, but you want to get more volume. So say a bodybuilder, typically in bodybuilding, you want to progress in volume. So say they come in, they do, like, let's make it really simple. Let's just say they do a row and a pull-up or pull-down. We'll just say pull-down exercise. So in that row, they might, you know, after like the first 3 to 4 workouts, they're going to start to struggle to make progression on that.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do something as simple as like an 8-week plan where the first 4 weeks you do your row and you do your pull down and you make progression in volume. So you either add weight or you add reps and you stay within the time frame appropriate for a bodybuilder. But then all of a sudden weeks 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, you add the rows with the sled afterwards.
Mm.
So now all of a sudden your volume goes up and it lets you get more work in. When you start to be able to, like, when typically you would slow down with how much you can improve the row and the pull down.
Right.
So, yeah. So it's hard to progress 5 pounds every week.
Sure.
You know, if that was your goal.
Right.
So you could add in something like the sled to add in some volume work where it doesn't mess up the progressions of the other two exercises.
Yeah.
But you're also not adding a whole new third exercise that's going to wear and tear your joints. So it's kind of an in-between space to add volume, but not add stress to your joints.
Yeah. John Russin, I think you follow him too, the PT. Yeah. He kind of said something in that effect. I was reading some of his stuff recently, and that he programs the sled in a lot for his athletes that are in season just because of
that. Absolutely.
Is that they're not adding enough volume, but it keeps them moving through. And I guess adding volume is maybe not right, but it's just a safe alternative where they can still be going somewhat heavy, but they're not going to overwork themselves.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head with the explosive.
Yeah.
They can still practice maximal explosive work. So that way they stay explosive during the season.
Right.
But now they're doing it without an eccentric load. They're doing it without the wear and tear on the joints. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the main concerns when you work with athletes is if you have like, say a football, well, let's go baseball because their season's insane. It's really long. So how do you keep the strength and explosiveness that you built in the off season through the whole season?
Yeah.
Using something like sleds would be a great way because you still get to do maximal explosive production.
Right.
So rather than you just like lifting light weights, that's going to decondition the body for strength actually. Mm. So you would do explosive work on a sled, keep the explosiveness like on point and as high and peaked as it could be. Yeah. So that's one of the, like, I've worked with, I've written programming for high school football before and, like, entire, like, football teams. And then I've also written programming for a bunch of different individual sports,
right.
like football, baseball, swimming, track and field, stuff like that. And where I feel like most people make the mistake is they go too light during the in-season.
Sure.
So they try to, like, they periodize their training. So in the off-season, like, right after the season, you have to do, rehab, like letting the body calm down, you know, like let it regather itself. Then you get into like a volume building phase. Then you get into a strength or explosiveness peaking phase.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get into the season and then they start lifting light weights or piddly stuff. And they actually progress. They actually speed up the deconditioning of their body.
Right.
So they would actually be better off not training sometimes. Cause I've seen programs where like an athlete will go from doing sets of like explosive singles,
mm-hmm.
Like say 70%-ish. And all of a sudden they're told to go into the gym and do, you know, like 5x10 at 50%. You're progressing the body in the opposite direction.
Sure.
So you're actually deconditioning. You're actively deconditioning explosivity. Ugh. So whereas you'd be much better keeping them doing explosive singles at, say, 60%.
Sure.
You know, something where you're letting them, like, decrease the weight, but you're not decreasing the intensity.
Yeah.
So once you start decreasing the intensity, the deconditioning starts kicking in faster. So that's where sleds would be awesome because you can maintain 100% intensity.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
So,
As far as we've hit on it before about muscle cardio, and I think we talked about it a little bit earlier, you know, we've talked about when you're going to look at this and, you know, when somebody's new, we talked about kind of working through injury with it. And, you know, we talked about pulling the sled for lighter weight for longer lengths of time. But the thing that because of limited time, I do use it for more interval type training.
Yeah.
It's basic sprint work. What would be, and I guess everybody's a little bit different, but what would be like an adequate muscle cardio workout interval type training using the sled?
Yeah, so one example, and this is an example so you can plug in exercises that you might be able to do better, is I've had, we have a flat sled that you can put vertical handles on both sides.
Yeah.
So I actually took out the horizontal handle, like the lumbar handle.
Right.
So there was on each side, there was two posts. So the athlete would do like a 60-foot sprint, because we have 20-foot segments outside of our gym. Mm-hmm. So they would do a 60-foot sprint. As soon as they crossed the line, the sled would coast a little bit. So they would drop down and they would do 10 push-ups.
Mm-hmm.
They would then jump to their feet and do 10 bodyweight squat jumps.
Yeah.
And then they would go back around the sled, sprint the other way, and do it again.
Oh, wow.
So, and we figured this person was fit enough that their push-ups were very aggressive. So their upper back and shoulders would have had a lot of brunt, stabilization work with the aggressiveness of the push-ups. So, and then the squat jumping is going to get glutes, hamstrings, quads, everything.
Right.
So, we were able to get basically full body with just those two movements. So we were, they would do 60 foot down, 10 push-ups, 10 sprint, squat jumps. Then they would go right into another 60 foot, 10 and 10, and be back at the starting place. And then they would get, the one person we did this with is the first time they got a 30 second break. The next time they got went 20. So 20 second break. Then on round two, they got a 30 second break. Round three, they got a 40 second break. Then the next one was 50. The next one was 60. And then we were done. So that way, as they got more fatigued, they got a little more rest. But it wasn't enough that they actually got recovered.
Right.
So, yeah. So, we ended up doing, I think that would end up being like 5 rounds or so. And that was it. That was done. So,
that's
it was
great.
Pretty effective. It was under, I think it was under 10 minutes, roughly. Yeah. But there was a crap ton of calories burned there. Your body's going to have recovery to do after that.
Yeah.
So, and then plus, if you look at the research and science of interval cardio, why it works so well, is if you do very, very high intensity intervals, your body continues to deal with that afterwards.
Afterwards. I just had this conversation with somebody the other night. I was walking over at Winthrop a Wednesday morning, a buddy of mine, and he's taken a lot to heart what I've been able to talk to him about, and keeping up with his walking which was what he needed to be doing at the time.
Yeah.
But we started talking about, you know, what could be next. And I was just telling him that I was just like, hey, don't think from all the walking you're doing, you want to start jogging. I was like, let's look at what we can do here.
Yeah.
I said to, you know, get that long-term burn, because that's the thing I think most people don't understand is when you, you know, have your low cardio, pretty much your calorie burn is over when you're done.
When you step off the treadmill, you're done.
Yeah.
That's it. So if you walk for 60 minutes, you get 60 minutes calories burned.
Right.
At a very, shitty pace.
So,
it's not even a significant amount of calories.
But if you're doing intervals or Tabata sets, or I know those are a little more aggressive, but I mean, that's the thing is showing the, you know, somebody whose true interest is, you know, hey, I need to lose some body fat, or I need to, you know, increase my muscularity a little bit, whatever it is, man, those intervals. And again, back to the sled, is it's a safe way to do it. You're getting the resistance, you know, some resistance, and it's fast. I mean, you can get those done so much quicker.
Yeah, sleds are already set up.
Yeah.
You just grab it and go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there was one research I read. Unfortunately, I don't have it was in the American College of Sports Medicine, journals, but I don't know, the edition or anything like that. But they had done a study where 6 30-second sprints equated to 60 minutes of walking.
Jesus.
Yeah, so I would rather do 6 30-second sprints, because, let's say you rest, in the study, they rested 3 minutes in between them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at 20, 21 minutes. And with a majority of that being standing still, the 3 minutes were a complete rest.
Right.
The athletes were told to sit or stand, but not move.
Right.
So, and in that time frame, they burned as many calories as the 60-minute walkers.
Yeah.
So I'd much rather, and you don't even have to do 3 minute rest because that's a little excessive. But you could do a 30-second sprint and then, you know, walk for 30 seconds to a minute.
Yeah.
And you could get all that done in 10 to 12 minutes.
Exactly.
And it's as effective as 60 minutes
yeah.
of some other you know, bullcrap. So yeah, I'd much rather do something for 12 minutes that I hate than for 60 minutes that I hate.
Well, and the thing that I think, and I use my wife too many times on these conversations, but
as long as it's good stuff.
Yes, of course, 100%. No, but one of the things that I had discussed with her was, hey, you know, what you're looking for, you need to do sprints. And mm-hmm. I think so many people get hung up on, I'm not fast. That doesn't have anything to do with sprinting.
And that's actually, it's more effective if you're horrible at
it.
That's, and you burn more calories being horrible at
it. Exactly. And that's what I want to get across to everybody listening is your sprint is your sprint. I mean, again, try to get faster. And the sled, actually, lots of research on that, of that doing just that, making, you know, because of going through the sprint motion. And I mean, there, you can look all that stuff up, but there's a lot said about using a sled and what it does for somebody's sprint times. But your sprint is your sprint. Get better at it and do it more. That's the goal. And again, it's shorter term rather than slugging away for 60 minutes, you know, getting nothing and being, getting 60 minutes of calorie burn where you do 10, 15 minutes of all out sprint work.
Mm-hmm.
Again, your sprint, not Manute Bolt, or not, I said almost said Manute Bolt. What's his name?
Usain Bolt.
Usain Bolt. Yeah,
there you go.
Anyway, but you know what I'm saying is don't regulate yourself, and that can go across the board for the gym altogether. Yeah. People get caught
like,
up in.
Like I've told clients before, like where I'll have a client and like we'll be doing a cardio based activity, like muscle cardio, and they go, man, I'm not doing good at this. I'm like, that's a good thing.
Right.
If you were if you were more aerobically fit, we'd have to train even harder to get the results.
Yeah.
So I laughingly tell my clients that I want them to stay miserable at cardio.
Yeah.
And the reason, like how we do that is we don't repeat the same exact thing like very often at all.
Yeah.
So that way their body doesn't have a chance to learn the mechanics and actually reduce their caloric burn.
Mm.
So as you, like we talked about this before, I don't know, maybe not in the podcast, but if I went out and ran a mile every day for 100 days, first day is horrible. You're going to burn a ridiculous amount of calories. You might not be able to run a mile.
Yeah.
By the 100th day, you're going to be so conditioned that that's going to be a warm-up. It's going to feel like a waste of time.
Yeah.
And your body reflects that in how many calories you burn. So the more repetitive you do a cardio-based activity, mm-hmm. the more good you get at it, it actually becomes less effective.
Yeah.
So whenever somebody says like, oh, I should, you know, you tell me to do sprints, but I'm horrible at sprints. Congratulations. That's like, this is the best time in your life to do sprints because you're going to get the most for it.
Exactly.
Now, like for every day from here on, you're just going to get work. Like as you get better at sprints, you're going to get worse at burning calories.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. And it's an excellent thing to be horrible at cardio.
Yeah.
Because then you don't need as much of it. So yeah.
Wow.
So, but yeah, so that's something where it is true is like if people, it's often hard because in the gym, you're supposed to push your body to failure. No one likes failure. We all like feeling like we're good at something.
Right.
And that's a huge thing, and we can go down that too. But the point is the whole point of doing sled work or any type of cardio is to reach a stressful state to where your body really can't handle it anymore.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why it's going to change.
Right.
So if you do it and it's like, oh, it's kind of hard, but I was good at it.
Yeah.
Why? Like, you don't want to be good at this. Like, we want
nobody in the gym cares, I promise you.
Yeah, no one gives a crap if you're good at cardio. So, but, and no one really cares much about other people anyhow. We're all, in a sense, like, we're all self-absorbed. Like, you're going to cheer someone on when they do well.
Yeah.
You're going to feel bad for them when they don't do well. But other than the extremes of them doing really well, like hitting a PR in something, or really bad where they're injured or they're super, super depressed and you haven't seen them for a while,
right.
No one really cares. We all have our own journey. We all have our own goals. So most people aren't paying attention to you anyhow. So,
Well, that's, you know, you're talking about in a little off the sled, but it's during my last few weeks, I've really divided up my workout. And again, I've been doing a full body workout and I've dropped it back to just 2 days a week. After some of our conversations, I was like, all right, maybe 3 days a week is a little more than what I need right now. And I've started to try to put in a little more of this muscle cardio in just to see what it's going to do for my body.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've started doing, and again, a little bit off the sled topic, but I've started doing the Concept 2 rower, 2,000 meters. And I've reduced my time by 37 seconds in 3 weeks.
That's impressive.
Well, it's, well, I think I was started so bad. Horribly, I was so mad to start. But anyway, when I first did it, a little aside, I looked up because I had no concept. And so I look up, I'm like, world record times for 2,000 meters. And so I look it up and the first one I see is 8 minutes and 49 seconds. And I'm like, no way. I just did an 8:41. It was for a 12-year-old girl. And I was like, oh, I'm right there in it.
Oh, that's so awesome.
But after that, and again, like I said, I'm going to get more efficient at that, but it's something that I've never done, and it's just a I've never given it much credence, but it's something that's new. But the thing after that that I've started doing is the rubber blocks that we have. I think they're a foot tall or 14 inches tall.
Yeah, something like that. Like it's a 10-foot side, a 10-inch side. Like a 14-inch side and like, I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, so
big 70-pound block.
Yeah, so I've been putting those in the middle of the deadlift platform. And setting the timer on my phone for 5 minutes, and it's step over burpees. So step over, step over, step over,
burpees. Oh, you do burpees, that's crazy.
So, but for 5 minutes.
That's horrible.
First time I did it, I'm not kidding, I kept looking at that my phone like, you've got to go off this time.
Do like 10 burpees, and it's like 4 seconds later.
Oh my God. But again, I can already tell, this is the third or fourth week that I've done it.
Yeah.
Like I did them this morning, actually, and I was just okay, this is... Like you said, it is getting easier. And it's like, okay, when does it get to the point that it's easier that you start adding something else into it? Because, I mean...
Yes. My general answer for that, because that's actually a really good question, is when it... Like, you want to be good enough at something to be, first of all, safe, and to be able to complete it enough and do, like... So if you try to do 5 minutes of burpees and you can only do 10 seconds, that's too hard of an activity. You're not going to get anything for it.
Right.
So it's... The answer is, when does it need to change, is when you no longer question whether or not you can do it. That's my answer for myself.
Yeah.
It's a very tough standard to live by, so good luck. but that is the answer. So typically when you take on a big challenge like cardio or something, like that first day you would have done the burpees. It was like, when is this going to end? Am I even going to make it to 5 minutes? Holy cow, like maybe this isn't even good for me. Like, you know, you
all
start having a lot
of questions.
Of
that. Yeah.
So then the second time, like you're like, okay, I made it last time, but you still go through panic mode. When you're getting close to the end, you're wearing out.
Yeah.
By the fifth, sixth time or so, you're like, okay, I've done it enough. It's not going to be fun. I'll be miserable, but I can get it done.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden it hits the timer and you're like, oh, I could have done more.
Yeah.
Absolutely time to move on.
Yeah. The amazing thing for me on that is because it's the rower and it's usually 8 minutes, 10 seconds now, I think is what it is, 10 or 11. Okay. But it's 2 rounds of the 5 minute of burpees. The second 5 minutes, oddly enough, always seems easier than the first. And I don't know if I'm going that much slower.
Yeah.
Or what
it's
it is,
a couple. Like, it's either you've already experienced it for the day. So I have a client I work with who's in their 60s. And they'll commonly say, like, we'll be doing something. They go, oh, this is heavy. And I'm like, it's the warm-up. I was like, we're still working our way up. And they said, well, it feels heavy. And I said, it's because it's the heaviest thing you've done so far today.
Right.
Therefore, it feels challenging.
Yeah.
So the first 5 minutes of burpees is the hardest thing you've done that day.
Yeah.
So therefore, it feels hard. The second time, your body goes, ah, this crap again. But your adrenaline's already up. Your endorphins are already up. Your mind's already like, okay, I've already done it once. I can do it again.
Right.
So you have all that stuff in your favor for the second time.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. So, well, anything else on sleds?
No, that's probably 40 minutes of sled stuff is probably plenty. So if you're still listening to this, thank you, and hopefully it was helpful. But no, I do think it was good. And two things I want to say real quick is Spud, I think it's Spud Inc., like Spud Inc. straps.
Yeah.
If you go to that, if you Google that, their website, they have a ton of attachments for sleds, and that's a great place to go. The price isn't that bad, but there's... If it's a little bit high to you, those things last forever. So it's a well worth the investment. Also, you can DIY on sleds, like look up YouTube videos like you did and make your own sled if you don't have one. And then if you're looking for articles for sleds, my favorite place to send people to is Westside Barbell.
Yeah.
So EliteFTS.com has some good articles, but Westside Barbell has great articles. And Louis Simmons, the coach of Westside Barbell, has mastered how to use sleds.
Kill people with sleds.
So he knows the in and outs, everything you want to get for it, like what you'd have to do. So there you go. So those are some good resources for you.
For sure.
Cool. Anything you want to add?
Today's my son's 10th birthday. So happy birthday, McCoy.
That's awesome. Happy birthday, man. So cool. Okay. So if you like this information, you can find more from us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, Brutal Iron Gym. If you like the podcast, please share it. So the more people we help, the happier the world will be. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions for future podcasts, please let us know. The podcast is for you, so tell us what you want to learn about. And you can reach out to us at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. So, thank you, Nate, for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Yes, and as always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.